I'd like you to turn to that chapter that we've just read in Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 1. But before we think about that, there's just one little thing I'd like to mention here this morning. And that is that a little time ago we brought out a book entitled 1000 Bible Questions. They're all questions in verse form, questions from the Bible. Some are very easy, some aren't so easy. Well, I have some copies where the pages have missed the print, just a few pages, one or two pages, but we can't sell them because they're defective. So I haven't got the heart to throw them away because these verses are so good that I brought a few with me this morning, and I thought if anybody would like one, you're welcome to have it free of charge. We're giving them away because of that little defect. But it will help you in your study of the Bible. So I've got a few copies down there in the pew. And anybody who wants one, let me know. And you're very welcome to have one. Let us come then to this chapter. And the scripture that I'd like to bring before you today is found in verse 27. I want to talk really about the whole story. And I know you may think it's a well-known story. But even so, I trust that the Lord will speak to us as we think about these things. But verse 27 really sums up the chapter, I suppose. For this child I prayed. And we'd like to look at the prayer of Hannah. Hannah's prayer. For this child I prayed. And the Lord, or you know that was in capitals there. It's always the word Jehovah, the name of God when it's in capitals in our authorized version. And Jehovah hath given me my petition, which I asked of him. This certainly is a lovely story, and as I say, I expect you're well acquainted with it altogether. But it's interesting to see the setting of it all, isn't it? We find in verse 1 that it talks about this man, Elkanah. It tells us two or three things about Elkanah. It tells us that he was a man of Ramathaim Zophim. And Zophim is another word for the priests. So it would seem that he was of the priestly tribe, the tribe of Levi. His name was Elkanah. And then it gives us a little of his genealogy. He was the son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zaph, and it says there he was an Ephrathite. That means, of course, he came from Judah, the tribe of Judah. And of course it means, as you will well know, he came from the tribe of, from the town of Bethlehem. That was the city of David. And that was the place where the Lord Jesus Christ was born. So that's very interesting, isn't it? He was an Ephrathite. He came from Bethlehem. But on this occasion he came down from Mount Ephraim. He was now living in Mount Ephraim and he came down. With regard to his genealogy, I don't know whether you'd like to turn over a few pages to 1 Chronicles 6. I don't know whether you read these genealogies in Chronicles, but they're equally inspired. They're inspired as much as John 3:16. And God has put them all there for a reason. And we do read in 1 John 6, if you look at verse 33, that of the sons of the Kohathites, Heman was a singer, and he was the son of Joel, the son of Shemaiah, the son of Elkanah. That seems to me to be the same man. If you tie that up with what we just read in 1 Samuel 1, the son of Jeroham, the son of Eliel, or Elihu, we've got in Samuel, the son of Toah, or Tohu, we have in Samuel, the son of Zaph. So there's a little section there, giving of the priestly line, and you will notice that this line of that Samuel was in, that Elkanah was in, was the Kohathites. I don't know how much you've looked into these things, but you will know that Levi had three sons. And one of them was Kohath. And Kohath had a son called Amram. He had another son called Izhar. But Amram had two sons. One was Aaron, one was Moses. He also had a daughter, one was Miriam. So what I'm trying to say is really that Samuel was in the same family as Moses. He was a Kohathite. And the Kohathites received special privileges. You know, if you read in Numbers, it's all very interesting, but they had special places. The Kohathites, when they set up the tent, and the family of Moses, of course, was on the east side where the gate was. But there we are. I just mention this because that's interesting with regard to this man, Samuel, being born in that line. He was of Zophim. We've reminded ourselves of that. He was of the tribe of Levi. And yet he was in Mount Ephraim. Now, you might say, well, how would he be from Bethlehem and also from Mount Ephraim? Ephraim's up in the north, and Bethlehem, of course, is down near Jerusalem, not far from Jerusalem. You can see that on the maps in the back of your Bible, if you've got one. Most of the tribes stayed in their areas. You know, the tribe of Ephraim would have stayed in their area. They had an allotted portion, and you can say the same about Zebulun or Naphtali or Judah, any of them. But the Levites were a little different. The Levites never had an area in which to live, and they were scattered throughout the whole land of Israel. So we have a picture here of people who were priests, people who were in the house of Levi, being all parts of the country. And it seems to me they travelled. I don't know whether you're interested, but in the book of Judges, chapter 17, we have the story of a man this man Micah. Now, he lived in Mount Ephraim, you see. We've been talking about Mount Ephraim, haven't we? Well, it was a very superstitious family. You know the story, I hope, about the way his mother collected all this silver because she wanted to make some gods. And Micah stole his mother's money, and then he gave it back to her. That's verse 4 in Judges chapter 17. But it does say in verse 7, he made these gods in verse 5. He made things that he could worship. What a terrible time the time of the judges was. There was so much superstition and idolatry, so much turning from the true God, Jehovah. That word that we've read this morning in the reading. There was so much turning from the true God. I don't know what you think about this, but it seems to me a picture of our own age. Masses of idolatry about. Men are foolish, clever men so-called. Worship idols. There will be people, while you're sitting in the pew here, there will be people going into houses in this country, apart from other countries, and they'll be worshipping idols. And they're so foolish to worship idols which cannot speak, they cannot hear, they cannot lift a finger, they cannot do anything. And this is what Micah did. He had this money given to him by his mother, I'll return it to you, she said. And he made idols and he worshipped them. But when we come to verse 7, that's what I was going to say, there was a young man who came out of Bethlehem, Judah, of the family of Judah, who was a Levite. And he sojourned there. He went to be with Micah in his home. Well, you know the story. And now Micah took him in and said, lovely to have a Levite for a priest. This is a wonderful thing. And so he took him and hired him to be his priest. Paid him to be his priest. Well, it's all a sad story. You read it on. It's all a very, very sad story. And idolatry and rebellion against God does bring sadness, it brings sorrow, it brings trouble. And that's what's happened in this country, isn't it? We've got trouble galore. Our politicians don't know how to deal with issues. That's the truth of the matter. They pretend they do, but they don't. Because God's hand of judgment is upon the nation. God's hand of judgment is upon the nations, and he says that it will be so if they turn from God. What have we read this morning in Isaiah in that call to worship? If the nations would keep the Sabbath, honour God, they would know the blessing. If that was so with Israel, we come along and just walk from where we parked our car, and there's a little boy comes out with a football. And I said to my wife, the poor boy doesn't know anything about it's God's day. He doesn't know. And that's the state of the nation today. We're in a sad, sad state, and that's how it was in the times of the judges. They were in a sad, sad state. And here was Micah having this Levite for a priest. But it's interesting in a way that he came from Bethlehem, Judah. I just wonder, I mean, I don't know that it would be so, but I just wonder if he was of the same family. Elkanah, whether he was of the same family of that man. I don't know. But it does give us the picture, doesn't it, that the Levites travelled about from place to place, and they were supposed to do the work of a priest. We read for that man who went to Micah, he wasn't a very good man in doing his job. He didn't do it faithfully or properly at all. But there you are. Anyway, whether Elkanah was related to him or not, it does remind us that these travelled about. But Elkanah came from Mount Ephraim. He was originally from Bethlehem. I said it was a sad period, and it was a sad period, because we do not read, right from the time of Moses, right through the period of the Joshua and the Judges, we do not read of any prophet except one. It seems as if God was not speaking to the Israel nation at that time. There was a prophetess, come to that in a little while, Deborah. But there was one prophet, only one prophet mentioned in the Bible all the time from Moses right through to this period. What a sad state when God doesn't speak. That prophet, incidentally, is found in Judges chapter 6 in the time of Gideon. Before Gideon actually was raised up, the people realized they had gone against God, and they came to God and asked for his help. And how did God help them? It's very interesting to look in Judges chapter 6. When they cried unto Jehovah because they were oppressed by the Midianites, how did God help them? This is how he helped them. It says in verse 8 that he sent a prophet. We're not reading his name. We don't read his name. But God sent a prophet. And what the prophet said was that God had done so many good things for Israel. He said, I brought thee up from Egypt, brought you forth out of the house of bondage. Verse 9, I delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians, and out of the hand of all that oppressed you, and drave them out from before you, and gave you their land. Not just the Egyptians, but all the Canaanites. God had been so good to Israel. So good to Israel. And he said unto them, verse 10, I am Jehovah your God. Fear not the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But what had happened? The prophet had to say to the children of Israel, ye have not obeyed my voice. That was how God answered their prayer. Telling them that he had been good to them, and they'd take no notice of him. They wouldn't hearken to his voice. Oh, what a situation in our own country at the time, isn't it? Except the people don't seem to cry to the Lord. But it's very true that God has been very good to this country, but people will not hear God's voice. They desecrate his day. They break his law. They bring in laws which are contrary to the word of God. Do you know, I'd like to say this to remind people, there are two creation institutions. Things that didn't come in with the law of Moses, but things that were right from creation. One of them was the Sabbath day, and the other one was marriage. And in the last few decades, or years really, I suppose, our government have legislated against what God has given to the people. How can we expect anything but the judgment of God? These are serious days in which we live. God's hand is against this nation, And it was against Israel at this time. So it was a very solemn situation. But in spite of all the wickedness that was going on in Israel at that time, Elkanah, one man, a Levite from Mount Ephraim, originally from Bethlehem, Elkanah was devout. Did you notice that in the reading this morning? He went up every year. Look at verse 3. He went up every year to worship. And what's more, he took his family. And it wasn't very good to go to Shiloh, was it? Shiloh, of course, was the place where the tabernacle was, which had been made in the days of Moses. The temple as such hadn't been built. It's sometimes referred to as the temple, but it was the tabernacle there. The tabernacle was in Shiloh. This was the place where God's people should have worshipped, but they didn't worship there, generally speaking. And in any case, what was there to do with the worship? Did you see what it says at the end of verse 3? Hophni and Phinehas. They were the priests of Jehovah. They were in the line of Aaron. And they were there. They were there. And here was how Elkanah, bringing his family up to worship God, and these two were there. And we don't get told here in chapter 1, but you know the truth of it, don't you? We'll talk about that perhaps this afternoon a little. But these sons were wicked sons. Hophni and Phinehas were wicked. The things they were doing there when people came to worship God, they were wicked. Absolutely wicked. And in spite of that, Elkanah regularly came up to keep the command of the Lord, to worship God. I like that, don't you? It says in verse 3, he came to worship. I wonder why you've come to this house this morning. Do you come because you always come? Do you come because you like to meet people? Do you think it's good to come? Do you think it's good perhaps to bring your family to come? Or have you really come this morning to worship God, the great God of heaven? I like this story of Elkanah. He went up to Shiloh every year, and his intention was to worship and to sacrifice. That's what we read there, don't we, in verse 3? To worship and to sacrifice. What a contrast there was between this man and the general run of society in Israel in those days. With Hophni and Phinehas getting up to all the tricks they were doing, and the people generally careless about the things of God, it was still really the end of the times of the judges. And Eli, such a weak man, who was the follower of Aaron, such a weak man. What a contrast there was. Dear friends, I ask you this question solemn this morning. Is your life a contrast from those all about you? Or do you like to be like the world? We live in an age when many professing Christians think it's clever to be like the world. They think, join them to win them or something like that. Be like them. Elkanah wasn't like that. He didn't want to be like those who were wicked. He came up there, it says there in verse 3. He came every year because he wanted to worship God. He had in his heart to do that which was real and true. In other words, I would say he had a real work of grace in his heart. He desired those things which true believers ought to desire. And that's how he was. There was a general neglect, of course. If the priests and these sons of Eli were very careless, and Eli himself was weak, as I've said, the people would be like that. What's happened in our own country? The archbishops and the bishops don't know where they're going. They don't know what they believe. Some of them came up with terrible things. There was a man called Robinson, the Bishop of Woolwich years ago. Some of you may remember him. Some of you may remember Archbishop, or rather Bishop Jenkin of Durham, and the way he said he didn't believe in the resurrection. But it's true, isn't it? The terrible things our present Archbishop of Canterbury says. They're a disgrace. They're a disgrace. They're a betrayal of the Protestant faith. And when the leaders go astray, it's not difficult to understand that the people will go astray. And that's what had happened in the days of Elkanah. Yet in spite of this, Elkanah remained faithful to God. And every year he sought to keep God's law and come up to Shiloh to worship Jehovah. Now, I want to talk about Hannah's prayer. And the first thing I'd like to say about it is the cause of the prayer. What made Hannah pray? And secondly, I'd like to think about the content of the prayer. What did Hannah actually say in her prayer? And the third thing I'd like to say is the culmination of the prayer. What was the result of it all? What happened? So they're the three little thoughts. The cause of the prayer, the content of the prayer, and the culmination of the prayer. Now the cause of the prayer. The trouble was that although Elkanah was so devout, he had two wives. And because he had two wives, it was a divided family. And that was really the problem. We've read, haven't we, about Peninnah being the adversary of Hannah. She provoked her. If Elkanah had only had one wife, the whole situation would never have arisen. Now we know that from the beginning, Jesus said it, didn't he? From the beginning, it was that a man should leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife. That was God's order, that one man should take one wife. I know that God gave Moses the bill of divorcement for the people, but that was because of the hardness of their hearts. God's purpose was that one man should take one wife. And if Elkanah had kept to that, the whole problem would never have arisen in his family. Dear friends, when you depart from what God says in his holy word, in this book of truth, when you depart on anything, you're bound to have trouble and difficulties. You might say, well, I have difficulties anyway. Well, we do, because of sin. But Elkanah had difficulties because he had two wives. Now, Elkanah could have said to himself, I don't know that he did say to himself, but he could say to himself, well, Abraham had two wives, and Jacob had two wives. Now, Abraham was a good man. And Jacob was brought to be a God-fearing man. And if these good men in the past, these great predecessors of Elkanah, could have two wives, what could be wrong with it? The trouble was, Abraham and Jacob had gone against what God had originally given in his word. A man should have one wife. And while they both live, they're joined together in holy matrimony. And God's people should not depart from that. But Elkanah had. Peter got two wives. But you know, when you think of Abraham, why did he have two wives? He had two wives because Sarah didn't have a son. And he couldn't, at that earlier stage, see how she could have a son because she was getting older all the time. And so, when Sarah said to him, take Hagar, have a son through her, Abraham did it. He ought to have said, no, I can't do that. God has given me you and I must just believe in God. Of course, he came to the place where he did believe. He did believe God about the son, and Isaac was born, as you know. But it was at a time when he didn't really see that clearly, that he took Hagar to be his wife. But that brought a lot of trouble into Abraham's family. I don't need to go over the details, do I? You know the story in Genesis. All the problems that came. Because Abraham had taken Hagar, as well as Sarah. Things were a little different in the case of Jacob. Jacob was deceived and he was given Leah when he thought he'd got Rachel, and it was Rachel that he really loved. But he was given Leah and Leah became his wife. And he should have had only one wife, but he did love Rachel and he wanted Rachel. And so he worked another 7 years for Rachel. But it brought problems in the family. It did bring problems in the family. It always brings difficulties and problems to go against God's word. And let me say this quite clearly. There is no reason why any believer should say, well, this good man did it, so it's all right for me to do it. You might think there's somebody, even in this church, that's a good person, and you think what they do is right. But we're told not to put our trust in men. We're told to trust only in God, and if we trust only in God, we'll want to keep to God's word in its entirety. If God says something in his word, we will want to keep it. That's how it should be. And if only Elkanah could have said that at the time, well, I don't know what he thought in his mind, but if he did think about Abraham and Jacob, if he had said Abraham and Jacob were great men, they were the patriarchs, they were the fathers of our nation, but they were not perfect, and I cannot follow them in all things. And neither can you, neither can I follow anybody in all things. You can't follow me in all things because I'm an imperfect being. I'm a sinner. And you can't do the same as me. I would only lead you astray somewhere along the line. We cannot follow men. We must always take heed to what the word of God says. And Elkanah had it there. The man should cleave to his wife, one wife. You know, it is said, I don't know whether it's true, but some commentators have said that he took Peninnah because Hannah didn't have any children. Well, I don't know whether that's so or not, but if he did, it was a sad thing that he did it. But there you are, he had the two wives. And there's some likeness in a way with Rachel, isn't there? Because Hannah was saying now in her prayer, give me a man child. And Rachel got to the stage where she wanted a child. Do you remember that? Leah had plenty of children. And Rachel didn't have any children. It says quite plainly in Genesis that the Lord had closed her womb. God did it for a purpose. But Rachel wanted children. And I think it's in Genesis 30, the first verse, where you read how she came to Jacob and said, give me children or I die. And Jacob had to say, am I God? Jacob would have given her children if he could have done, but he couldn't. God had closed her womb. But how different, and perhaps we'll see this as we go along, we'll talk about it later, how different Hannah was from Rachel. Do you know, the Apostle Paul says that he had learned to abound, and he had learned to be abased. You know the text? And I think when I read this story of Leah and Rachel and the things that went on, we haven't mentioned them all just now, but Leah hadn't learned the blessing of abounding. She had children, and yet she wasn't satisfied with it because she could see Jacob loved Rachel. Rachel hadn't learned to be abased. God had given her no children. And she hadn't learned that that was the way God had worked in her life. And although it may be contrary to what she wanted, yet that was God's purpose. At that time, certainly. And you can say, in a way, the same was true of Peninnah and Hannah. Peninnah hadn't learned to abound. She wasn't satisfied. God had given her children. You know, it was lovely for her. But she didn't like it really, because she could see that Elkanah's love was for Hannah. Do you get the picture? She hadn't learned to abound. And in a way you could say Hannah was having to learn how to be abased. It was difficult for Hannah when Peninnah kept provoking her. Oh dear friends, it's easy to take the words of the Apostle Paul, isn't it? I have learned, in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. I have learned to bound and I have learned to be abased. But is that really true of us in our lives? Do we really understand that God's providence in our lives brings the situations which are of His choosing, and which, if we're true believers, therefore are good? I like Elkanah, don't you? You know, although all this was going on in his family, between his two wives, all this friction, and it must have been very difficult for Elkanah. I haven't got two wives, of course, but I try and put myself in Elkanah's position. What a difficulty it would have been for him. A terrible situation for him. But in spite of this, he persisted in going up to Shiloh every year, regularly, to worship God. He wouldn't let the problems that arose in his family stop him doing what was right. I don't know how you feel about this, dear friends, but do you sometimes give way? When things are difficult, you think, oh, I can't do this. Elkanah wasn't like that. He came every year up to Shiloh to worship God. That was his desire, to worship God, to honour God, to glorify God. That was the thing that he had in mind. I like it too, because Elkanah loved Hannah. It says that, doesn't it? He loved Hannah, verse 5. Although the Lord had shut up whom? Now, wasn't that a marvellous thing? The Lord had shut up her womb. She had borne him no son. And yet he loved her. And he loved her greatly. Henry VIII wasn't quite like that, was he? When his wives didn't bear a son for him, he had to get rid of them. But in Elkanah's place, he still loved Hannah, even without any offspring. No offspring at all. And he showed it, because you see there, verse 5, he gave Hannah a worthy, or we would say a double portion, a special, something special for Hannah. He gave to Peninnah too. He was very fair. He gave to Peninnah and her children, it says there. That's in verse 4. But he had something special for Hannah because he really loved her, in spite of the fact that she had no children. He showed his love. Think of the behaviour that caused this prayer. It says there about Peninnah, doesn't it? Peninnah. Verse 7. She provoked her. Now, there was no need for her to do that. It was very unkind of her to do that. Peninnah had children. She had a lot to be thankful for. But there she was, provoking Hannah. Oh dear friend, it's a sad thing when people just provoke others to wrath. I hope you don't do that. It's easy to do it. But if you do it consciously, that's a very, very wicked thing, isn't it? And Peninnah was very wrong in what she did here. Provoking Hannah. But I think the very place when she did it was wrong. You know, she did it when they went up to Shiloh. Right there where Elkanah was trying to get his family to worship God, there was Peninnah treating Hannah like that. Sins are bad enough anywhere. But in the house of God, what an awful thing. And the time was sad, wasn't it? It was the very time of year when Elkanah wanted his family to be there, involved in the worship of God. You can't make your family worship God. You can't make them love God. But Elkanah tried. He tried hard and brought all his family up, the children of Peninnah as well as Peninnah and Hannah as well, brought them all up there for just that one time of the year to worship God. And here at that very time, here's Peninnah treating Hannah like that. It was terrible, wasn't it? Terrible to the extreme. And I think it was terrible because she persisted in doing it. You look at verse 7, it says there, as he did so year by year, so she provoked her. She did it all the time. She kept on and on and on. Dear friends, the devil's agents are always keeping on. Do you find that? If you're a true believer, I'm sure you do. They keep on and on and on, trying to weary you and trying to stop you worshipping God in your heart and with your spirit, in sincerity and in truth. What a terrible thing Peninnah's behaviour was. What about Hannah's behaviour? It tells us there that she was in bitterness, verse 10, she was in bitterness of soul. And she wept. She just was unhappy about it. She hadn't learned to be abased, as I said. She couldn't take it as God's providence overall in her life. And there she was in that bitterness of spirit. It's a shame to be bitter, isn't it? A lovely woman like Hannah. That's how she was. You can understand it in a way. It was terribly sad for her. She would have loved a child. But God had shut her womb. That was the truth of the matter. And there she was weeping about it. But it does say in that verse as well, she prayed. She prayed unto Jehovah. And that's a lovely thought, isn't it? She was praying. And really that's the best thing to do. When we have sorrows in our life, when we have difficulties, when we have troubles, the best thing is to pray. And what about Elkanah's behaviour? Well, I love the way he says to her in one of these verses, verse 8 it is, isn't he? Why? He tries to comfort Hannah. He tries to encourage her and do her good. Why is thou heart grieved? Why weepest thou, he says? Why eatest thou not? Why is thy heart grieved? Why are you letting these things get on top of you? He tried hard. I know it was hard for Hannah. He knew it was hard for Hannah. But he says, am not I better to thee than... He says here, doesn't he, in verse 8, than 10 sons? It's a little bit like the phrase that we get at the end of Ruth about Ruth, what she was to Naomi, being better, one of those verses there, better than 10 sons. Well, there we are. I can't see the verse at the moment, but it's there in Ruth chapter 4. But there we are. Elkanah comes with this effort to try and soothe her in an upset state. What a kind, thoughtful man. How lovely it is if we can be kind and thoughtful, when we can try and understand the sorrows of others. Perhaps we cannot fully sympathise with them as we would like to, because they alone have to bear it. But it was a nice thought, I think, that Elkanah was trying to help Hannah at this stage. So let's think about the content of this prayer, shall we? Hannah, she came and prayed unto Jehovah. That's what it says in verse 10. She prayed. And she prayed something definite, didn't she? She says, if thou wilt indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid, remember me, not forget thine handmaid, but will give unto thine handmaid a man child. She had a definite prayer. There was the one thing she wanted. She would love to have had a man child. And so that's what she came to Jehovah and prayed. If only God would give her a man child. In that sense, I was going to say earlier, wasn't I, how different she was from Rachel. She was different from Rachel. Rachel didn't go to Jehovah. Rachel went to Jacob and said, give me children or I die. But here's Hannah going to God himself, the God of Israel, the true God, the living God. And she's just asking for, not children, she just asked for one child, and that it be a man child. That's what she wanted. She was definite in what she asked. And it's good to be definite in prayer. We can ask amiss. We can ask for things that just we want. And God doesn't always answer, because it's best for us not to have what we want. In this case, God had a purpose, of course. He wanted to bring Samuel into the world. He wanted Samuel to be there in Israel to replace Eli. And so he caused Hannah to pray. And Joseph Hart wrote to him, prayer was appointed to convey the blessings God designs to give. Long as they live, should Christians pray, for only while they pray they live. But that's the truth of the matter. If God's got a blessing to give, he makes his people pray for it. And it's a wonderful thing if God indicts your heart to pray. There is another hymn which says something like that, isn't it? When God inclines the heart to pray, he has an ear to hear. And God inclined Hannah here to bring her concern to him, to pray about this matter, that she wanted a man child, and she was able to bring it specifically to God. What have you prayed for this morning before you came? Did you pray for a blessing in coming to the house of God? What were you praying for? Well, here's Hannah, realizing her inability to have a man child, and God is the only one who can give her this man child. She comes to God. And it's good when we can realize our inability, and the only hope is to turn to God. That's what Hannah did. And you notice it's very solemn in verse 11. It starts off there. She vowed a vow. She made a vow. If God would give her this man child, she says, she would give him unto Jehovah. Now, what a thing to pray, wasn't it? What a thing to say. Here she was wanting a man child, and she says she's prepared to give him to God. And yet she knew, we'll talk about this afternoon, I hope, she knew what it would mean in giving him to the back to the what was called the temple, or it was the tabernacle, of course. And yet she makes this solemn vow. It couldn't have been easy for her, but so much did she want a man child. And there she was, praying, it says there, before Jehovah. And Eli saw her mouth, verse 12. And it tells us about her lips in verse 13. Hannah spoke in her heart, but her lips moved. But no voice, no noise was coming out. There she was, her lips were moving in what she was praying for, that God would give her a man child, and she would give this man child back to the Lord. She was saying it all in her heart, but she wasn't saying it out aloud, audibly. She wasn't. So Eli could hear no voice. She had no idea what she was trying to say at all. But I do think, dear friends, I don't know what you think about this, but I do think it teaches us that Hannah understood a great principle. That God is not concerned with words. He's concerned with the heart. My mother used to teach me, I often say my prayers, but do I ever pray? And do the wishes of my heart go with the words I say? And that's the truth of the matter, isn't it? It's good that you come to a prayer meeting. I hope you do come to prayer meetings. I hope you pray together, seek to pray, not always perhaps audibly, but pray in your heart when you meet with other believers. But it's what you actually desire in your heart that is true prayer. And Hannah understood that. She had no need to say words out loud. Her lips might be moving because she's thinking of words, but the prayer really is in her heart. Oh, that God may cause us to pray from our heart. Surely we've got a lot to pray for in these days. The state of the country, the state of our local situation, the state perhaps of our families, the state of the church. Everything needs prayer. And here was Hannah, realizing a need for prayer, and she went to God and knew that God knew her heart. And God knows your heart, whether you're real. You might bow your head, but are you really praying? God knows the heart. And there was no show with Hannah. You know, we read in the New Testament a story that Jesus told of a certain man, a Pharisee, who stood up and prayed and said, I thank thee that I'm not as other men are. But Hannah wasn't like that at all. No show with her. She just went there to the temple or the tabernacle and she prayed from her heart that God would grant this one desire that she had. Well, Eli thought she was drunk. I don't know what you think about Eli, but he was a strange man in a way, wasn't he? He couldn't bring his own family up rightly. And here he was, here's a soul come into the house of God and is praying from her heart, and he doesn't understand that that's what she is doing. Now, I don't know what you think about this, but I don't see that drink makes people particularly quiet. Hannah wasn't making any noise at all. Do you sometimes hear drunks going past your house at night time? Well, you can hear them because they make a lot of noise. I've heard them. And I suppose everybody's heard them at some time in their lives, or perhaps you've seen them in the towns. They get very, very noisy. But Hannah wasn't noisy. And yet Eli thinks she's drunk. You can say if you like, I suppose Eli would have seen lots of drunken women there. They came up and were acting as they were with Hophni and Phinehas and all the evil that was going on. They probably were drunk. And Eli might have assumed that people just did get drunk. And so he says to Hannah these words, doesn't he, about why, how it thou will be drunken. Verse 14, put away thy wine from thee. How wrong Eli was. Do you know, in Hebrews chapter 5, verse 2, we read about the job of the priest. And this was the job of Eli. Hebrews chapter 5, verse 2. It says there that they should have compassion on the ignorant and on them who are out of the way. And that's what Eli should have done. He should have had compassion on Hannah. He should have seen that she was a woman of a sorrowful spirit. But he didn't discern it. How many ministers are there about today who don't discern the sorrows of their congregations? But that's their duty. And I suppose we say it's the duty of every Christian to try and understand the sorrows of others, to try and enter into them and help them. But Eli just says, how long will thou be drunken? Put away thy wine from thee. What a thing to say. But I love the way Hannah answered. She doesn't respond saying, no, I'm not drunk. I wonder what we would have done. Would we have felt like saying, talking like that? But Hannah didn't. She just answered very quietly and definitely, but she does answer. And I like that, the way she explained. You know, we do read, don't we, in the New Testament, that believers should be always ready to give a reason for the hope that is within them. We should always be able to speak to people quietly, confidently, truthfully, and say to others the real truth. And that's what Hannah did. She explained it. No, my Lord, I am a woman of a sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but poured out my soul. That's what she had done. Poured out her soul. She could say that honestly. That's what she had done. before Jehovah. And Eli accepted that. He says in verse 17, go in peace, and the God of Israel grant you thy petition. And she went away with ease of heart. She went away happy. I didn't mention earlier, did I? But it does talk about her eating. She had taken Elkanah's advice. And it says there in verse 9, after they had eaten in Shiloh and after they had drunk. And that was right. It's good to look after the body. But now, of course, with Eli's blessing, she could go away very, very happy. I believe that God had answered her prayer. Well, of course, God did answer her prayer. And that's really my third little thought, the culmination of the prayer. And we have this very definite in our text. She says, Jehovah hath given me my petition that I asked of him. This was a true prayer, a God-indicted prayer. And God granted her the answer. We won't say any more about it because the time has gone, but it's a wonderful thing, isn't it? When God's people are brought to pour out their soul to him and know that he answers prayer.